I was alerting you at the beginning of the program before we tried to get the Jews out of Bruce. There is a major constitutional crisis with DT ordering an investigation of the investigation and the Department of Justice complying. Totally unprecedented, full of banana republic stuff. Take it from there, please, Bruce.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry I'm late. I was, kidnapped by the CIA and sent off to Guantanamo, which has about as much truth in it as President Trump's claim in a tweet over the weekend that a politically motivated FBI started the investigation against him. We've had a truly remarkable week, beginning first with Rudolph Giuliani, now one of the president's lawyers, making a set of otherwise completely unsubstantiated claims about what he says special counsel Robert Mueller intends for the investigation, claiming that it'll be wrapped up in September, claiming he wants 2 hours and only 2 hours with the president, claiming that Mueller agrees that a sitting president can't be indicted. Since the special counsel has not spoken and former Mayor Giuliani has made this whole series of spectacularly inaccurate statements to date, we have no way of gauging the truth value of this. But it turned out that this was just the prelude to a remarkable weekend in which really right on or within days of the first anniversary of the Mueller investigation, the president sought first to distract and then actively change the subject and actively pressure the Department of Justice. In a series of tweets on Saturday, the president did something no president has ever done, which is to order the Department of Justice, historically independent, to investigate the investigation against him. I hereby order, went the tweet. Or I will hereby order, I think was the exact formulation. In the face of this, this put Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who is sitting in for Attorney General Sessions in the Russia inquiry since Sessions recused himself, it put him in a difficult position. Rosenstein has defiantly said no one can push him around, and yet at the same time, he doesn't want to get fired. And so he complied somewhat and agreed to let the Justice Department's Inspector General look into whether the FBI was motivated by politics when it opened up its inquiry into Trump campaign officials' meetings with Russian officials.
Bruce, now, aren't, I'm sorry to interrupt, but aren't the Donald's unexpected maneuvers, in a sense, or unpredictable maneuvers, entirely predictable?
Well, they're predictable for him and his personality. But there is no surprise. Nonetheless, if you go back really all the way to George Washington, you actually have to go back to George Washington to find the last time that a president attempted to directly steer a criminal investigation. Even in the Nixon years, this wasn't the case. And particularly after Watergate, the independence of the Department of Justice in criminal inquiries has been a paramount political value. Republican administrations, Democratic administrations, liberal administrations, conservative administrations, it has been unthinkable for the president to direct the professional criminal division of the Justice Department to initiate an investigation or to drop an investigation. Trump claims this is within his power, and indeed Attorney Giuliani went so far as to say a couple weeks ago that, well, the president can't be indicted even if he did something wrong. This is setting the presidency above the law in a way that has never been tested within our political system.
Nixon, of course, tried to do it, but couldn't pull it off.
What Nixon tried to do was stop the Archibald Cox investigation, the Watergate investigation, and particularly the subpoenaing of White House tapes by ordering the firing of the special prosecutor, and when that didn't work, firing the succession of officials who in turn refused to fire the special prosecutor, the Watergate prosecutor. So Nixon tried, but it didn't work. And of course, Nixon had was up against a Democratic Congress, which meant that the constitutional checks and balances were in place. There was the threat of impeachment, and indeed articles of impeachment were passed by the House of Representatives, and it was that, or by the House Judiciary Committee, and it was the possibility of impeachment which gave those Republican officials who understood the depth of Nixon's corruption the courage to say, "Mr. President, it's time to pack it in."
Have any of the current mob of Republicans shown the same moral courage?
None, other than the perpetual never Trumpers. I mean, people like John McCain, certainly, and Jeff Flake, all of them about to leave Congress, have been critical of this president and defended the Department of Justice in this matter. But to the contrary, we now have the remarkable spectacle of the House Intelligence Committee, which again, historically, was a nonpartisan defender of the intelligence establishment and nonpartisan monitor of the intelligence establishment, now taking the side of the presidency and doing the president's work by further pressuring investigatory and intelligence agencies, the FBI and others, to show them unredacted investigative documents concerning the Russia inquiry, interviews with informants and other sorts of things, which, again, intelligence officials and Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein resisted but ultimately complied with. So we have a kind of authoritarian chipping away at the historic boundaries. And I think there is a pretty widespread feeling that this weekend, while up until now there's been a kind of dance, it is now a full-scale assault on that historical separation, the wall, the sort of Chinese wall between the Justice Department and the White House on criminal matters. And at the same time, of course, that the White House and its allies keep pumping out complete fabrications about the origins of the inquiry. After all, it is an Australian diplomat, Mr. Downer, who began the Russia inquiry, who reported to his American counterparts the information the Trump administration having the Trump campaign then having contact with Russia and knowing about secret Russian emails, Russia cache of emails from the Clinton campaign. It was Downer, not the FBI, not Comey, not the Clinton campaign, who started the ball rolling. The president doesn't want to acknowledge that fact, so we've got this dual front war, really, that consists of massive factual inaccuracy over and over and over again, combined with a full-scale administrative assault and political pressure on the Department of Justice.
Two other topics I want to raise. One of them, of course, is the consequences of Santa Fe and the extraordinary timing that the detestable Ollie North takes over as NRA president.
Well, you know, of course, the latest school shooting, 10 people killed outside of Galveston in the little town of Santa Fe, Texas. It being Texas, no one is expecting a sort of Florida-level uprising, although the police chief of Galveston did send out a message saying he is simply unwilling to engage in any argument further with gun rights folks.
He's blaming it on violent media. He's blaming it on Ritalin, or rather, blaming the great wave of violence in the U.S. on anything and everything except a gun.
Well, indeed. Well, and Ritalin in particular was my favorite one. You know, Ollie is saying, "Well, we're getting all this violence because now there are all these kids medicated on Ritalin." You know, Ollie North was, of course, the Reagan administration official who traded guns with Iran and used the money to fund the then illegal Contra war in Nicaragua. So this is someone who knows something about breaking the law and covering it up. But he's not the only crazy in the room, I have to say. We've had a Republican member of Congress who said the problem is that our schools have too many doors. We have to have fewer doors and fewer windows. And there's much discussion now in sort of NRA circles of, well, we need to harden the targets of these schools. At the same time, there's been some very good reporting on this tragedy, which points out that actually, if you take all of the gun control rhetoric or the anti-gun control rhetoric for the last couple of years and say, well, do we want police armed? Do we want police in the area and in the building? All of that happened. The police were there, engaged with this shooter within 2 minutes, this disturbed young man. And yet 10 people were killed. It didn't work. So even though I think North wishes otherwise, and even though Texas itself is not about to change its open carry laws, this latest incident, I think, is going to contribute to growing national weakness of the NRA. We'll see more in November. I think it is going to be a quite significant factor in a lot of elections. We have reports of many of teenagers registering to vote in large numbers, and the Parkland kids and the kids around the country who have followed in their footsteps are out there registering voters now as we speak. And that's likely to change at least some races in November. It's a consequential thing.
One final topic, and we have to deal with it with alacrity, and that is that, well, we were mentioning Ollie North and the Iran-Contra contretemps, but here's Mike Pompeo on crushing Iran.
Well, indeed. I mean, what Mike Pompeo now is doing with both Iran and North Korea, but I think most immediately dangerously with Iran, is more than just tough negotiation talk. He has set out a series of steps that would amount to Iran simply folding its cards. These are non-negotiable demands. These are, I hesitate to say a declaration of war, but they are being articulated as a black and white, do it all or you are going to face all the wrath of the United States set of demands. The real impact of this will not be on Iran. I think Iran is going to continue playing its long game. The real impact is going to be to divide the U.S. further from Europe, further drive a wedge between the U.S. and its historic allies who have a very different idea of how to engage with and how to contain Iran's ambitions.
Bruce, got to go. Thank you very much. Bruce Shapiro talking to us from Ireland, columnist with The Nation, exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma, and there's a lot of that around at the moment at Columbia University.